You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello everyone, a very warm welcome along to the William Hill Golf Podcast. Good to have your company. Dave Kellner and Dave Tindall with you once again to preview the events in the golfing world this week. We've got the Spanish Open on the European Tour and the Shriners Hospitals for Children Open on the PGA Tour. Warm welcome to my partner in crime here on the podcast, Dave Tindall.
Yes, hello Dave, how are you?
I'm very well, how are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Good week last week.
Yeah, it was decent, wasn't it? You had Lagergren, who gave you a full place at 100-1, and Tom Lewis, a share of a place in the Dunhill Links, and I cashed with a little bit of, enough to buy me a chocolate bar at the Tuck Shop with Fratelli. Dylan Fratelli, who squeezed into
fast
the...
Fast finish, didn't he?
Yeah, it was a fast finish. It was a weird week for Fratelli, because he was up there and then he managed to 3-putt from 3 feet, fell away on the Saturday, and then came storming back into, not quite into contention on Sunday, but contended for the places on Sunday.
Yeah, it was an odd tournament, that, because Adam Scott did it even worse. Yeah. Didn't he? Fast start, then he says this course is made for him, and then he's rubbish for the middle two rounds, and then he comes back again.
It was bizarre, wasn't it?
Golf, eh?
Unfortunately, we didn't manage to find either of the two winners. Victor Perez won at the Home of Golf in the Dunhill Links, and Cameron Champ bounced back with another win in California, this time in the Safeway Open. And he scored this time last season too, Cameron Champ. Clearly a prodigious talent. He'd shown glimmers, hadn't he?
Yeah, he kind of fell off a cliff for a while and then just had these odd rounds, and he thought, is he coming back yet? Or when do I sort of trust that he's back? And I don't know, I didn't think it would be on that course somehow. Mm. I thought that might be a bit too...
fiddly.
Yeah, for him. Not a chance to sort of unleash the power, but he was great, wasn't he? With obviously the story about his grandfather as well, being in a hospice in Sacramento and driving back to see him, and that was the man who taught him the game of golf. So he did brilliant to hold it together.
Yeah, and he actually said afterwards that he's not sure anything will ever top winning that event in that circumstance.
Yeah,
so it was an emotional week for Cameron Champ and a winning one. What did you make to the winner, Victor Perez, in the Dunhill Links?
Well, it was one of those ones where you think, when you find out on, say, like Friday morning that he's been living in Dundee for 18 months because his girlfriend is at uni there. She's like a dentist, isn't she? Studying dentistry.
Yeah.
But then you kind of think, well, had I had that information on Monday, would that really have trumped all the other information I had? It's kind of, you can sort of backfit it, can't you, to make a case for him. But I'm sure there are others who live nearby and have lived nearby for longer who are more established on the link. So, but it was like an intriguing little angle, wasn't it? Because he said stuff like he could now hit his 7-iron, like he could like smash it into the wind because of the heavy air. He wouldn't have known that before, would he?
No.
Because of trust stuff that he wouldn't have been able to through his local knowledge. So he held himself together well. But I think Matthew Southgate will be kicking himself.
Oh, it might take him a while to get over that one. I didn't see much of the golf on Sunday, but I saw an interview with him after the round on Saturday. And he was quite jovial with Nick Doherty, talking about how he was just enjoying playing and taking, you know, all the standard stuff about taking it one shot at a time. But he talked about how his short game had plagued him for so long, but he'd finally got that under control and those demons came back out on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, he three-putted the par 5, didn't he, the 14th. And then the 17th, he played a brilliant shot out of the rough to the road hole, where you think, how do you find that green because of the angle? And he kind of started it off a little bit left and it ran up onto the green. And I thought, oh, brilliant, that's superb. And then he three putts again. And I was just like, oh, what a shame.
Yeah, a disastrous finish to the event for him, but a good check nonetheless for Matthew Southgate.
Should we mention Rory?
Should we talk about Rory McIlroy's comments, which I thought were ill-timed at best and pretty damaging to the tour at worst, really. He came out and said that the setups in Europe were just too easy. I'm paraphrasing there. Not got the actual quote in front of me, but I'm sure many listeners will have heard and seen Rory McIlroy's comments after the event.
Yeah, I mean, it just the circumstances. He just lost the team event with his dad, and he was by a sort of count back.
Yeah,
so it was clearly miffed. I saw the interview live, and the first bit I thought was odd. It's like that scene from The Office when David Brent goes on a terrible date and he's asked, will you see her again? He goes, wouldn't have thought so. So they asked him again, would he play this again? And he sort of said that. I thought, why? Why would you not want to play this again? He sounded like he was done there.
Right.
And then I think I turned off thinking, did I hear that right? That he's no interest in playing this again. And then I read the fuller quotes, and then he went into a bit of a rant, didn't he, about courses being too easy. And then obviously people get their calculators out and start working the average score on the PGA Tour and the European Tour. And look, it's even worse on the PGA Tour. So his words sort of didn't really cut the mustard.
Yeah, you can say that the standard, there's different factors go into this, isn't there? The standard's better on the PGA Tour,
yes.
You would argue. Yeah. So the scoring's
will be
bound to be lower. But I was thinking back to the week before that at Wentworth, which I think is a wonderful setup, and we agreed on the podcast it was.
Yeah.
And taking Billy Horschel's quotes, he'd said that week that it was refreshing to play a course like Wentworth because courses on the PGA Tour had been set up so one-dimensionally.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things. I think until the game gets a grip on technology, a lot of these courses that were once real tests are becoming obsolete.
Yeah.
That's the long and short of it.
I think Rory must have been watching too much British politics where you can just say anything you want that's not true.
Yeah.
There you go. Bit of politics there.
You disagree with him?
Yeah, but I wouldn't be too hard on him because he tends to just talk off the cuff, doesn't he?
And, well, and I love that, and I think that's one of the great things about McIlroy.
Yeah, you're going to get some good bits, some bad bits, some daft bits, but you sort of, at least you get something.
Yeah. Let's move on to this week then. Any comments you've got about McIlroy's comments, do drop us a tweet at D Kellner, at Dave Tindall Golf if you agree or disagree with our assessment. Let us know. We'll talk about the Spanish Open first, the Open de España on the European Tour. John Rahm at the top of the betting here at 3-1. Sergio Garcia is 6-1. Rafa Cabrera Bello is 10-1. Andrea Pavan is 16-1, along with Hao Tong Li. Adrian Aus is 28-1, and it's 35-1 and bigger the rest. It's a pretty disappointing turnout for a national championship, but the prize fund is relatively small when you compare it to the Rolex Series event in Italy next week, so it's understandable that this event has taken a little bit of a hit, and it's been rescued to a certain extent by the strong Spanish contingent. But I suppose when you've got Wentworth, the Dunhill, the Rolex Series event next week, you're talking four events in a row there. One of them is going to take a hit, and it's been one.
Often these events, when you think, oh, that's a bit poor, and why haven't they? And then you've got to put it in the context of a schedule, haven't you?
Yeah.
And clearly, this is difficult for some of them. My initial thought was, oh, fair play to all the Spaniards who've come out to play it. I mean, they probably should do, but they don't have to, do they? But they're all there. But I've got a bit of an in because I sort of know Gonzalo Fernandez Castaño a bit, so I spoke
to
him.
That.
Yeah, I spoke to him yesterday, and he's kind of said he thinks it'll be a two-horse race between Rahm and Garcia. Well, he kind of said, I hope it will be a three-horse race with, with himself, and let's hope he can do. But he's 125-1. But I think there's a feeling that this is. He said, because he's from Madrid, he said this is an easy course. Really, he expects the scoring to be low. He said the course was soft because they have to water it a lot in the summer to keep it sort of alive and going. So it's set up for the big guns, I think, to maybe power away. I was said to you off air, if I could get a forecast on Rahm and Garcia as a hashtag your odds, I would.
Would it be a reverse forecast?
Yes, probably.
Yeah. It is going to play quite easily this week, you'd expect anyway, because we've seen this course before, haven't we, in Madrid. It hosted the Madrid Masters back in 2004, 2005 and 2008. Richard Stoney and Charles Schwartzel won a couple of those, and Raphael Jacquelin won the other one in between in 2005. 18 under, 19 under and 23 under in those events. They have lengthened the course a little bit since, but technology has advanced so much in the last decade.
So that sort of wiped that out.
Yeah, precisely. More fuel to Rory McIlroy's fire when the winning score is 23 or 24 under this week. Fairways are tree lined, but they're quite wide, aren't they? Generous fairways. Yeah. So,
and the rough's not up, apparently.
No, I think these players are going to take this one apart, unfortunately. Rahm is tempting, but skinny enough, isn't he, at 3 to 1 as well?
I don't know what happened to him last week. I think he must have just...
Well, it was because I said, like, he never has an off week, and he had an off week. He seemed to get frustrated really early in that event.
Yeah, and then I think he realised that, you know, you can't really just catch up.
No, it was a bad week on the greens, wasn't it, for John Rahm? Every time I saw him in the early coverage on Thursday and Friday, missing, like, 8 to 10 footer after 8 to 10 footer, you could visibly see him getting more and more wound up by the situation.
Yeah, out of the two, probably. I mean, Garcia's just won, hasn't he? He's just come off a win, and Garcia is... I was counting up. I think 7 of his European Tour wins have come in Spain. 7 out of 16. That's an awful big percentage, isn't it?
Yeah.
I know you think of how he's won a few times at Valderrama, and he won his own event, but 7, that's... really does kind of... You could back him at 6-1, couldn't you, on those numbers?
Yeah, and Rahm loves bullying... fields like this, and he's got an amazing strike rate in Europe as well. So, I wouldn't put anyone off. Would I put anyone off back in the top two? I just think the prices are just maybe a shade skinny on both of them. I slightly prefer Rahm to Garcia, but I think Garcia may be priced more attractively
from an
each way perspective. So, I'm not taking either of them, but I respect them greatly, and that's why I've only got one selection in the event.
Yeah, I've just got one as well.
Okay, you fire away.
I am going for a Spaniard.
Okay.
Álvaro Quirós.
Yeah, I can see that.
He has got some course form back from 2008 when the Madrid Masters was held there. He started off poorly with a 74, but then went 66, 66, 64. And that doesn't sort of come in isolation because he is very, very good on Spanish turf. You look at earlier this year, he was runner-up at Valderrama. On a track where you would have thought that's not for him, although he does live nearby, so he knows sort of when to club down and all those sort of things. Mm. He was also 16th at Valderrama in 2018. So tree-lined tracks in Spain, it's kind of like red flag for him. It kind of alert you to him. Plus, normally you kind of look at his form, you think, oh, this might suit him. Then you look at his current form and you just sort of shake your head and go, what's he doing? But he had that run... when he was second at Valderrama, he was third the week before.
Yeah.
And then last 4 weeks, without kind of pulling up any trees, keep mentioning trees, he's not, he's made all four cuts. So all four cuts in September. For him, I think that creates a nice bottom line of consistency for him, where I think if you get him on the right track.
Yeah.
I mean, last week as well, 66 in round 3, and then he shot a 76 at the Old Course on Sunday. So it just didn't quite go for him then. So that his position looked a bit worse than it was. But I think he's playing well enough to get him back in Spain on his home turf. I was surprised under 2-1. I was thinking he would be something like 66, 80s, given that course form, even though it is old.
Yeah, no, I like it. 100-1, Álvaro Quirós. I'm going with Callum Hill.
Yes,
the Scot at 60-1 is my sole selection. He's had a meteoric rise up the rankings in the last 12 months with 3 wins on the Challenge Tour and a host of other top 10 finishes, and he's leading the Challenge Tour at the moment, and he's got his playing privileges for next season already on the European Tour, but he's showing no signs of slowing down. He finished in a tie for 26th at the Dunhill last week, where he opened 66-65, was bang there at halfway before just faltering over the final 36 holes. And he was 9th in a challenge event in Spain earlier in the season as well. So playing well in an event that is top-heavy but below the top two in the market, you've got a shot at the... finishing in those other 4 spots, haven't you, this week?
Yeah.
Each way. I thought Callum Hill was, definitely worth a few quid at 60-1.
Yeah, because I'm really struggling to find anybody beyond the very top of the market, apart from Quirós. And Hill was someone, just because you're going on pure form.
Yeah.
The rest, it's a bit of a sort of rag bag, isn't it, really? And you're not quite, or you've got someone like Adrian Naus, who's 28, when we've been backing him at bigger, much bigger prices. So yeah, I was struggling. Whether we'll come on to Vegas, but I found about 20 in Vegas that could back. I couldn't.
There's a few here where I thought, should I take a chance on real quality, out of form quality at the moment, and down, sort of down in class? Someone like Justin Harding, I was tempted by, who won in a much stronger field on the European Tour earlier this year, but he's had three successive missed cuts. But I thought, with a couple of South Africans having won here as well, that he was of interest at 60-1 if you could ignore a recent poor patch and maybe take a chance on him bouncing back.
I sort of had a look at the South Africans, Dean Burmester.
I like him, 80-1.
He was maybe one of them I was looking at. Jung Hung Wang has come back to form of late from being massively out of form, but he obviously won twice on the... He won twice on, won twice on the European Tour, hasn't he? So he's come back nicely. Of the locals, Nacho Elvira had a good run at it last year when he was third.
Yeah.
And if you look through 2008, the leaderboard, there's about seven Spaniards on it. So I think any Spanish player you could legitimately have a look at.
Yeah, I looked at another couple. Jamie Donaldson, who we mentioned briefly last week, he missed the cut last week, but he's out at 80-1 now. He's shown definite signs of recovery recently. I thought he might go well. And Eduardo Molinari has had an interesting summer, hasn't he? He's shown definite improved form and he's had a couple of chances to win. And he's 90-1 this week on a tree line track like this, which you've seen with the results at the previous events that have been hosted by this golf course. You can plot your way around here, can't you, as well? Definitely not one that's necessarily going to be overpowered, even though I think Rahm could.
Yeah.
You can just put it in position and make plenty of birdies.
Yeah, so we've got a few sort of possibles, but I think just one each, really.
That's it.
Wasn't really overly close to a second, I have to say.
No, I think more bets in the event in Vegas this week, which is the Shriners Hospitals for Children Open. And Brooks Koepka at the top of the betting at 8-1. Patrick Cantlay is 12-1. Bryson DeChambeau is 14-1. Webb Simpson and Adam Scott both 20s. Hideki Matsuyama is 22s. Tony Finau 22-1. Colin Morikawa is 25s. Gary Woodland 28-1. Joaquin Niemann is 30-1. And this is 40-1 and bigger the rest. And the fall series continuing with this trip to TPC Summerlin in Las Vegas. Long-standing event on the calendar, and we've got a pretty high-class field this week, Dave. I think the change in the PGA Tour schedule has definitely benefited the fields in these fall series events. It seems that way anyway.
Yeah, I mean, is it something like there's 11? There's like a third of the schedule is before Christmas, so you can't just think, I won't bother with those. They've had to get going, some of the bigger guys. Interesting week because you think maybe this would just be a complete, bomber's paradise and you're going to win with 20 under. But the winners aren't really that in that mould, are they, when you look at some of them?
It's such a second-shot golf course, Summerlin. Yeah. It doesn't matter what you do off the tee here. Just put the ball in position and find the right tiers because the greens are tricky. It's Bermuda from tee to green, bent grass on the putting surfaces, and they're tiered as well. So if you miss the greens, scrambling's very important. I just think I really believe this is a complete short game trap, really. And Jordan Spieth commented on that. We've seen the quotes on your website, Roto World, from Josh Culp and Spieth, who's not in attendance this week. He talks about how your wedge play and short iron play needs to be on song, and then it's very difficult scrambling on this golf course. So if you do miss the greens, you need a player with a really hot short game to contend here. And yeah, I don't think it matters what you do off the tee. It's pretty straightforward as far as I'm concerned if you're looking to categorise it.
You've got three, you told me.
I have got three selections this week.
I've got two, so if you want to lead off.
Yeah, I'm going Webb Simpson as my number one pick at 20-1. Definitely one of the events that he must circle on his calendar each year, and it's a genuine chance for him to get a win. And having failed last season to win, I think he'll be chomping at the bit to get one early this campaign. He won the event back in 2013. Fourth place finishes either side of that. Last 2 years finished 20th and 15th. He had three runner-up finishes at the end of last season before the playoffs, and he's just got the type of game that equates to success around Summerlin. All about strong iron play, short iron play and good scrambling. Ranking top 20 in strokes gained approach and strokes gained around the green last year. I think he's the one from the top end for me anyway. The only concern I've got is it's his first start in 5 weeks.
Yeah.
So there might be an element of rust there, hopefully not. And he can hit the ground running this week. And I thought 20-1 was fair from an each way angle here on Webb Simpson.
Yeah, I think as an each way punt, he offers you plenty, doesn't he?
Yeah.
To run into
a place. I expect him to contend.
Yes. I'm taking a bit of a punt here. It is Vegas, so why not? I'm going to go 90-1 on Zach Johnson.
Okay.
I'm not sure he'll be particularly popular this week because he's kind of, I think the perception is, where's he gone? He's just sort of not
at it. He's sort of in the autumn of his career now.
But I read some quotes from him at the Sanderson Farms where it sounds like he thinks he's very close to doing something.
Yeah.
And he was 14th at the Sanderson Farms on his... that week, and I thought that was it kind of backed up what he was saying. He was saying stuff like all parts of his game are coming together, but one of the things was his mental focus had been wrong. It was about kind of the outcome rather than the process and all this kind of stuff. I don't know why I'm belittling it because I like all that stuff, but rather than bore you with it all, that was a kind of general, there was a mental element to what he was saying as well as just the physical side of things, but he sounded like he was getting it all in tune from both sides. I thought the 14th was a nice run, and he said that he's playing Vegas, then taking 5 weeks off. So I think he's really going to put it all in this week.
Yeah.
And you look at his course form; he's only played it twice, but he's got a 10th and a 40th. When he was 10th, he shot a 62 in round one. And again, if you look at some of the winners, there is a sort of plotting element to some of them, and I think he can certainly do that. Something like the John Deere Classic has got a few decent correlations because you need a good wedge game, and he's got that. He's always brilliant there.
Yeah,
I just think this might be a good course to test that theory on whether he's coming back.
Okay,
and 90-1 was a price worth.
Oh yeah, you can have a few quid and not
like he's 40.
Not lose too much there. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Okay, 90-1 Zach Johnson. Your first pick, would he be the headline selection or if you?
Yes, he would.
Okay, Zach Johnson the pick at 90s. I'm going the guy that finished runner-up last week, Adam Hadwin, as my second selection at 45-1. I think he was maybe my best bet of the week at the prices. Number one in strokes gained approach last week en route to that spot in second behind Cameron Champ, and he's trying to force his way onto the President's Cup team still, Hadwin. And he likes this course too, having finished 10th at Summerlin in 2014. He's put up very good performances back-to-back in the past, and he can obviously put the absolute lights out on these kind of resort course tracks. I just think he's very solid. He was tied for first in birdies last week. You'll have to make a ton of those this week. And 45-1 Adam Hadwin, I thought, stood out to me, definitely.
Yeah.
My second pick.
I definitely see that. My second pick, someone I thought you might have gone for.
Okay.
And I always want to say his name wrong, but it's Poston, isn't it? JT Poston.
Yeah, I looked at him.
Do you know what the J and the T stand for?
No idea.
James Tyree.
Tyree,
apparently.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm
How
saying
do you spell
that right.
Tyree.
T-Y-R-E-E.
Okay.
Tree. Tree. T-Rye.
That's probably why he calls himself JT.
Yeah, people get it wrong. But Mr. Poston, Poston, I want to say. Why do I want to say Poston?
No idea. It is JT Poston, isn't it?
Poston, yeah. That's what the commentators say. anyway, enough about his name. He's just playing really, really well, isn't he?
Yeah.
Really, really well.
So solid.
Yeah. He won at the Wyndham Championship before the playoffs. Shot some great numbers there. If you want a guy who does well in a birdie fest, well, he shot 265, 66 and 62. And then in the playoffs, didn't get all the way, but he got to the third level. Second level, it was three, wasn't it, this time? But 59th to start off with a poor final round. Then he went to the BMW and was 16th. I thought that was a good effort in that company, just one bad round there. Then he came back out, which I kind of look quite... I'm looking for players who've had a knock. And that's your worry with Simpson, isn't
Definitely,
it?
Definitely, yeah.
So he came out and played the Sanderson Farms and basically just continued what he'd been doing with an 11th place. So he... is someone who's got all the current form. And then you think, has he got any course form? It's mixed, but in there is a fourth place 2 years ago. So he thought, yes, that is good enough for me. He's missed a cut either side, but I can look, I'll gloss over that a little bit. He has played really well at this course. He's in really good form, and he's a decent enough price at 60-1.
Yep. JT Poston is the pick for Dave. I'm going with a 100-1 shot I thought might be on your radar this week. I'm usually a current form over course form, but I'm going with Chesson Hadley at 100-1 as my third selection, in the hope that he can enhance that cracking course record. He's finished top 10 in three of his last five starts at Summerlin, with a seventh last year. A fourth place finish in 2017. Those are his two most recent efforts at the track. So that obviously bodes well. And then you're looking for the signs of life as far as current form is concerned. And he's played both full series events, missed the cut at the Sanderson Farms, but tied for 23rd last time out at the Safeway. That was much more like it. And hopefully that will act as a catalyst for a top finish this week. And his work around the greens was especially good last week. Hopefully he can give us a good run, and I thought that 100-1, yeah, definitely worth a worth a quid or two.
Yeah, it's sort of on my long list, but is it a very long list, I have to say.
Who else was on that list?
Charles Howell,
yeah,
fourth last week, and then he's got absolute ton of good form here. Been playing it for years and years. I've missed the last two actually, but used to come here every year. He's got a couple of fifths, a sixth, tenth, 15th, so 18th, a couple of times, 20th. So really, really good, consistent form. And he's striking his irons well at the minute, Charles Howell. Abraham Anser, he played it well, didn't he, last time? Ryan Palmer always seems to play it well. Sebastian Munoz, I think he's... We've kind of ducked him a little bit, but I think he's just in great form. And I think there's a slight feeling that, oh, he's just...
Were you tempted by Tom Lewis? Not this week?
Not quite, no.
80-1, I just thought...
There's a few at that kind of... Like Mickelson as well at 80-1. It's just sort of a bit beyond what you think.
He seemed out of form, didn't he?
But he did... I think he did rack up a few big numbers, then he just hit two out of bounds at one point. But then that could happen again, couldn't it? Well, less slightly here, but...
Yeah, I was looking at some of the younger contingent. I like Colin Morikawa again this week.
Yeah, I think he'll be popular.
25-1. He's bound to be popular, just a shade skinny for me. Matthew Wolf, who's 50-1. He's had a longer break than Webb Simpson's had, I think, Matthew Wolf. So that was a concern with him. And Aaron Wise was one of the first. Josh Culp commented
Birdie
on this.
Fest,
yeah, Birdie Fest. And he was one of the first to come out of college and set up his home in Vegas. Aaron Wise, and I thought he was interesting at 66-1 on a course where you're going to need to shoot low numbers.
Yeah, obviously another angle, this is Vegas, it's altitude, it's Nevada, and then there's the Barracuda, so people who've done well at the Barracuda might enter your head. I had a look at Bronson Bagoon because I've been backing him a couple of times of late.
Yeah,
he was 6th at the Sanderson Farms, 19th at the at Greenbrier, 5th at the Barracuda earlier this year, so he's got that. He's just got a couple of miscuts here. Don't know whether he should read much into them, but I think he's someone who you can give him the odd miscut here and there because he can throw them in, but then he'll bounce back quick. So he's another one.
Okay, shall we wrap it up?
Yeah, and Nick Watney as well.
Nick Watney might do well. He's I keep thinking he's going to
ready to win again.
Yeah. But we'll see. Let's recap selection, starting with the Spanish Open.
Yeah, I'll go a point each way on Alvaro Quiroz at 100-1.
Yeah, I'm going a point each way on Callum Hill at 60-1 for my bet there. And in Vegas?
Yeah, I'll have a point each way on Zach Johnson at 90-1 and a point each way on JT Poston at 60-1.
I'm going to go a point each way on all three of mine. Webb Simpson at 20-1, Adam Hadwin at 45-1 and Chesson Hadley at 100-1. And if I knew Simpson was going to be banging form, I don't mean banging form, but if I knew his game was fully primed, I'd be having more on him at 20s, but I'll keep it to a point each way given that niggling doubt.
We've got after this, I think it's Houston, isn't it? Houston moves in the schedule and then we go overseas.
Is that right? I didn't realise Houston.
Houston's
Interesting.
Then we go into Japan and Korea, yeah. And so it's,
we'll have a WGC, and then we've got the President's Cup coming up,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, so plenty going on still, and in Europe, obviously. We've got the Rolex Series next week.
So it's kind of good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, you kind of sometimes think we're getting towards October, we're into silly season wind down, but it's not this time.
Yep. Okay, thank you for your company, Dave.
Cheers, Dave.
Thank you, everyone that's tuned in and listened. Remember to follow us on Twitter. Any comments you've got on the podcast, do drop us a line at D Kellner and at Dave Tindall Golf. Check out all the betting at williamhill.com and on the app as well. And myself and Dave, we will be back next week for more golfing action. If you're having a bet this week, the very best of luck, and we'll speak again soon.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.